Parker. I'm from the University of Waterloo. Talking to you about combinatorial options is graphs. Basically, I'm going to model the problem and then translate into a graph. And on a problem on this area, then translate into a graph theoretic problem. This is a joint work with Christina that talked earlier. So first, I'm going to go through some definitions, building up what a combinatorial option is so you can understand the structure behind it and how that affects the graph and vice versa. Go through the actual construction that I came up with for translating a problem in combinatorial options to the graph. The analysis of the structure, how many vertices, et cetera, and then some implications and things that I hope to do in the future. So let's get into some definitions then. So the reason why we're doing this, or why combinatorial auctions are actually interesting to study, is because they're used everywhere. eBay, Amazon, or auctions in general are used everywhere. eBay, Amazon, I'm sure you all know what an English auction is, where you just sit there and bid on an item and whoever gets the highest price wins, stuff like that. But something you might not know about is that the FCC in the States auctions off parts of the electromagnetic spectrum. And what they do is they bid on the frequencies, and people want to bid on frequencies around the same geographic location. And so you want to bid on frequencies in bundles as opposed to one thing at a time. But you have no way of doing this right now other than through combinatorial auctions. So the way they do it now is just iterative auctions, and that actually has a lot of implications as far as inefficiencies, and I'll get to that in a second. But basically what we need to do is find an efficient way to determine who's going to win. So who's going to win the auctions? And that's where the combinatorial auctions come in. So we have these multiple items or these frequencies or whatever else. And the problem with single item auctions is the fact that what happens if I value two things, like a TV and DVD player together, more than I value one of those items separately from the other. So if I get a DVD player by itself, it's basically useless, right? I can't do anything with it. Whereas if I get them both, I can actually, you know, do something useful. So combinatorial auctions are going to allow us to bid on these sets of items to say that I want these two things together, but I don't want them separately. So some notation to go through. For the remainder of the talk, we're going to assume there's only one seller. There's applications where you have multiple sellers. We're going to have this set of agents, denoted as N. There's going to be N of them, conveniently. Items, there's M, also M of them. And we have these action sets. Actually, this should be V1, as bad notation. V1 up to VN. Basically, what the action sets are is basically how an agent will bid on these bundles of items. Since they're M items, the number of bundles is obviously exponential, right? Possible bundles. We need to know how the agent feels about each and every one of these in some way, whether they don't value them or whether they do, in order to come up with a solution, right? So these are otherwise known as bidder valuations, which is why they should be V1 up to VN. And basically, for a subset of items, we're going to denote the value of that set as B of S, so the bid for set S. And it's going to be an integer for this talk. Basically, it's going to be a monetary value, so you can just think of it as cents, if you like, or whatever else. And then we need some outcome, so how the items will be allocated and how much each agent will pay, so how much money is the seller going to get. Okay, so that's the notation. And so we're going to go through some brief definitions as far as how we're going to describe how the bidder communicates their values of items, of bundles of items to the seller. An atomic bid is simply a pair. You have a set that you're interested in and how much you value that set. So the maximum value that an agent is going to value this particular bundle of items. Some interesting things to note, or just to go over. Two atomic bids, we're going to say, are disjoint if their sets of items are basically disjoint. So that's when we say two atomic bids are disjoint. And recall, this is our notation for our bidding, where B of S here is equal to P. So the interesting thing here is that even given one atomic bid, we can actually extrapolate a lot more information than just BS equals P. For any set of items that contains S, we can say that the value of that is also P, because we can just say that all the extra items, they don't value at all, they're all zero. So our total value for that set is also P. But that's all we can do. We can't say anything else. So the problem then is we haven't expressed all 2 to the M minus 1 possible combinations. So an atomic bid by itself is obviously not enough. I mean, we could say you could use 2 to the m minus 1 of them, but obviously that's really ridiculous, and we don't want to do that. So how do we communicate all these bids, right? Obviously, we're not going to want to send 2 to the m minus 1 atomic bids. So the thing to note is that non-zero bids, so bids that the person actually considers value of, so not zero, is actually very sparse. So as a particular person bidding on something, I probably have very specific needs. I don't care about all the rest of the stuff. So when I was talking to you about the electromagnetic spectrum, I probably care about, you know, New York and New Jersey, but I don't care about the same frequency in California or wherever else, right? A very specific subset of all possible bids. So we use bidding languages to condense these valuation functions. So we talk about them basically concentrating on ways of representing important bids or non-zero bids. And this is going to come into play for how we construct our graph. So let's define a valid outcome. So an outcome is valid if it's just a bunch of sets of items such that they're all disjoint. So we can't, for instance, allocate the same item more than once. This is what we're trying to express. No bidder is going to want to share their item that they paid full price for. So we're going to define something called an OR bid now. It's just exactly the way it sounds. It's a set of atomic bids, and you simply assume that they're all ORed together. So I want this, or this, or this for their respective prices. And when we say it's an OR bid, it's implicit that the agent is willing to pay for any number of disjoint atomic bids that maximizes this sum. So the seller is obviously trying to maximize their profit. So when they're going through this and they're trying to find which ones they're going to give you, they're obviously going to make it so you pay the most possible. So that's what that's trying to say. So then what is our bid for an arbitrary set S and M if we're given this OR bid? Basically, we're trying to maximize the price, maximize the seller's profit. Always that's our goal. And we're just trying to make it so that we're maximizing it so that we get a valid outcome. Okay. So an OR star bidding, oh yeah. So the problem with the OR bidding language, obviously you can probably see this, you can't express XOR. So if I want set S and T, like I was saying earlier, I want maybe the DVD player, but I don't want, or sorry, the TV and the DVD player, but I don't want the DVD player by itself or something like that. You need to express some kind of exclusivity. You want bundle S or T, but not both. So OR obviously does not let you do that. XOR does. But we can actually modify this slightly using these things called dummy items. We have our set of items, and we introduce these little fake items that actually are worthless completely. So our bid for all of these individually is going to be nothing. We don't care about them. But what we do care about is that a valid outcome requires disjoint sets. So using these dummy items, we're going to be able to express exclusivity. So the important thing is that only agent I may bid on their set of dummy items. So when two sets are not disjoint, you're never going to have it so that they're not disjoint based on dummy items, unless you're from the same bidder. That increases the complexity of the graph a bit. So an OR star bid then is exactly the same as an OR bid, except our sets here are allowed to come from the items and from our set of dummy items. And so the power we get is basically the following simple example. Say I want coffee or tea, but obviously I don't want both at the same time. I want one or the other. I basically introduce this dummy item, D1, and I stick it into both sets, right? And now, these are no longer disjoint, so I'm only going to get one or the other. So obviously you can see the power. You can do anything with this OR or XOR. You can express every possible combination of possible bids. So now we're going to get into the problem. So we've got the structure. We're able to communicate our bids. We're able to say what items we want. And the seller now has to determine the winner. So that's known as the winner determination problem. So we need to allocate these items to agents. We need to maximize our profit. We need to allocate at most one item, as I was saying, to each bidder. And we need some efficient and optimal algorithm. So recall that a valid outcome is like this. It's just basically a set of disjoint items. An exhaustive valid outcome is a valid outcome that simply has every item in it. So every item is included at least, or exactly once. So basically we're just allocating all items. Even if the set of items has value 0, we're just going to allocate it either to ourselves if it's 0 or whatever else. We're just defining what an exhaustive outcome is. We don't care where they go. From this, we know that we have every item in there, so we can denote B star of S as our maximum bid for a set. So when we're talking about finding the winner, if I have a bunch of bids for the same set of items, I'm obviously only caring about the biggest one because I'm trying to maximize my profit. So to trim down the problem a bit, we're just getting rid of everything else and only considering those. And then the solution to the winner determination problem is obviously just finding a maximum or maximizing the sum over all possible exhaustive valid outcomes. You can look at this in a slightly different way as an integer programming problem. You define this indicator variable. Basically, you have the highest bid for a set being winning. It means 1. Otherwise, it's 0. And you simply go through and maximize over all possible x of these B star values, of the sum of all items. And here it's just checking to make sure that you only allocate one item or an item once, and there that it's in between 0 and 1, integer program. So obviously you probably know this is NP complete from this. So let's look at the graph construction of this problem. Again, we have N as our set of agents, M our set of items. We're going to assume the OrStar bidding language, so each agent is going to submit their bid in the OrStar language, and we're going to denote them VI. As I was saying, I should have noted that earlier. VIs consist of a bunch of atomic bids, as I said. They're inside the items, union the dummy items. And we're assuming that all of them are greater than zero. We're not accepting any zero bids, because if you don't value it for anything, I'll just keep it myself. RI, this is going to come in for the complexity of this construction. RI is the number of atomic bids, so that all of them inside a single agent's bid. MI is going to be the total number of items, so not counting items more than once, so just how many items total have you bid on. And R is going to be the number of unique atomic bids across all agents' bids. So unique, it means that just their sets differ in some way. It doesn't matter what way. Whether it's dummy items or not, it doesn't matter, as long as the sets are not actually equal. So we want to construct a graph to represent all atomic bids, and then we're going to use a graph problem to actually solve linear determination. So what we do, we label our vertices with I, Sj, and Pj. I is going to be our agent, and this Sj, Pj is just going to be an atomic bid that they submitted. And the interesting thing here is that when we're going through our graph, if we ever find a vertice labeled I, Sj, Pj, we know that agent I has the highest bid on that set. So we don't have to go through again and calculate who bid the highest on it. So this is the algorithm. It's fairly simple. Basically, you go through all your agents. For each of your agents, you go through all of their atomic bids. So for each of these atomic bids, what you're going to do is you're going to go through all your existing vertices and look for a vertex that has exactly the same set, if such a vertex exists. Because, as I said, we only care about the highest bid, so we're basically going to replace this bid with the highest value, whichever one it is. If it's already the highest, we don't do anything, obviously. Otherwise, we update. And if we can't find one that already has the same exact set, we're just going to add a new vertex. The way we connect this vertex is what's important. Basically, for all existing vertices other than the one we just created, we're looking for where it's not disjoint, so where bids intersect with one another. So those two bids are obviously in conflict with one another because you can't allocate an item more than once. So that's what the edge is representing, this conflict between two bids. So just a small example. I'm not going to go through every step of this thing. I'm just going to show you. Assuming you have two agents and these are your bids, you see there's a couple dummy items in here, so they don't. This guy wants a chair or a couch, but not both for some reason. And this person wants a DVD player or a VCR, but not both. That one makes more sense. And you can see that this person here values the couch and chair for 60, but this person values the total of 60 as well. But you're going to see there's going to be, because of the combination of items, you're going to get a different result than what's expected. So I'm going to label them 1 through 10, and then I'm just going to make a graph here. So if I went through the first agent, because TV is in sets 1 and 2, you have an edge. 2 and 3, DVD players in there. And 4 and 5, the edge there represents our dummy variable intersection, so we get exclusivity. And then we're going to add in agent 2. So first thing is, number 1 was replaced by number 6 because of the fact that TV now has a new highest bid. And then we have these other nodes added for basically the same our same reasons. We had this as the dummy, or the dummy bid there, and everything else is just because they intersect in some way. So how do we find who wins? Who wins what is basically the question. How do I find something that maximizes my profit? And essentially what we do is look for this kind of maximum weighted independent set. So you notice this is an independent set and also has the maximum weight, because if the only way I can get items allocated at most once is if it's an independent set. And obviously I'm looking for the biggest profit, so that's a maximum weighted independent set. So that's the problem with these graphs, is finding a maximum weighted independent set. So just a couple of quick notes. Two vertices are adjacent if and only if they're bundles or not disjoint. I've already went over that. And the winner determination problem is then equivalent to finding a maximum weighted independent set. And this is obviously NP complete. So the construction time is actually fairly simple. It's the most important point here, it's polynomial, so we're not doing anything crazy. And the problem itself is NP complete, so we're fine. So let's look at the structure then behind this. Interesting things to note is that we can't really approximate this very well. Independent set is extremely difficult to approximate. And basically, you go from a reduction from independent set to weighted independent set that preserves approximation, so you know that you cannot approximate weighted independent set any better. So because of this, we may as well forget approximation, because we have to have something that we can guarantee the seller, I'm going to give you within epsilon of your best optimal price. And since we can't do that, we may as well just say, well, I may as well just bite the bullet and go through and do the exact algorithm. So what we're interested then is looking at the structure of this and see if we can restrict the structure in some way so that we get a better algorithm than, you know, exponential. So the structure is basically like this. The number of vertices is exactly the number of unique atomic bids. So if we change the structure in that way, we're going to get a different running time. If we take a naive algorithm and we just go through every possible set of vertices, and for each one, check if it's an independent set, and then take the value or the weight of it, and then keep updating as we go along, then that's going to take exponential time in R. But if, for instance, we were to restrict that and say, well, the number of unique atomic bids can be at most some fixed constant, then we have obviously a nicer algorithm, or it runs in at least what we expect to be constant time. Restricting the number of atomic bids per agent is another way we can look at reformulating this problem. So say we restrict it to B, then R is at most N times B. So it's still an exponential algorithm, but we now have more control over the graph structure. So we're altering the graph in some way. Also, the number of edges is exactly the number of pairwise non-disjoint atomic bids. So we could also think of restricting that. Say we looked at a graph of bounded valency. Then we can say, well, we're restricting our combinatorial auction by saying that bids can only coincide to a specific number of other bids. So just things like that. So just to summarize, we went through the structure of combinatorial auctions and everything that's involved in them, and basically why that's an interesting problem and extremely difficult. And gave a polynomial time construction for the graph, and problem is obviously very difficult to solve. We need exact algorithms, and further, the structure is very important, because if you change the structure of the auction, it changes the structure of the graph, and vice versa. So the future work that I'm interested in studying in is actually graph classes for which weighted independent set is known to be polynomial, and what that does to the combinatorial auction itself, and if it's a reasonable restriction on the auction. So for instance, perfect graphs and all subclasses of perfect graphs, circular arc graphs, trees, grid graphs, all these have polynomial or linear weighted independent set algorithms. So I'm curious to see what happens to the combinatorial auction when you restrict it to these graph classes. And that's it. Any questions? It's 1.1. Yeah, it's something you can do it for. I think it's 2 to the or 1 to the 1.6. I can't remember exactly what it was. Yeah, it's much smaller than the naive. I was trying to just exhibit the example where the structure changes the problem. Yeah, but it's always based on the number of vertices. It's 1.6 something to the number of vertices. So yeah, if you were able to restrict that in any way using the auction, you'd basically get a smaller or a faster running time.
So one of the things in auction theory is trying to set the auction up to make the no advantage for someone to misrepresent.
Yes.
Do you know how you can do that?
Yeah, so it's called a Vickery-Clark mechanism, and basically what you do is you use sealed bids so no one knows what the other person is bidding, and you do that, and then you take the second highest bid to be the winning, or to be what the winner pays, and basically that ensures that the person wants to tell the truth. But I mean, these things are all theoretical. They want to tell the truth, but people still don't.
Right.
I mean, there's examples where you have a group of, I think it was places, Christina was telling me, places you want to go or places you'd rather go, and there's a list of them, and people mark down their order. They added one other place in there, and the order completely changed. Like the person had ranked, you know, Madrid over Paris or something like that, and all of a sudden added one place in there, and now Paris was before Madrid, and it was just like, people don't actually, I don't know, follow any of this theoretical truth-telling at all. So, I mean, you can talk about it in that sense and set it up so that you're trying to do that, and it's called a VCG mechanism, but they do that in here. There's a lot of studies done on how to do VCG mechanisms in combinatorial auctions.
It feels like when you're only bidding on one item at a time, do you still work with your bundle?
Yeah, they have the way of doing it as well, yeah. You just basically... Yeah, using any kind of thing where you basically... the way you pay is if you weren't there minus if you... there's a certain way of doing it. I can't remember exactly the algorithm, but basically it's the total cost or the total who would win if you weren't there versus who won if you are there, and you subtract them or something like that, and you get how much they should pay, and based on that, the person's incentive is to bid truthfully.
And how does that affect the problem?
It doesn't affect this so much as just how the bidders bid. After you get all the bids are done, you have no idea whether they told the truth or not, but you still have to solve the same problem.
It affects the bid, doesn't it? Doesn't it affect the value of the independent bet? It's no longer going to be the sum of the...
Oh, you still get the winner, and then after you get the winners, then you would use the VCG mechanism to calculate payments. But your payments would be trivial to calculate after you've gotten which sets were the highest bidders.
Does it remain true then that the maximum weight independent set using that fee share value
would still be your winner? There's some more in here. There's a lot more references to this, but yeah, basically, yeah. If you calculate the winners using this maximum weighted independent set or maximum set backing or whatever, it still remains. If you find those winners, then you go back and calculate the prices. Their still incentive is to tell the truth.
And
you'll still get the best.
There's not a different independent set that would have given the seller more money.
No. That's the only reason why their incentive is to tell them the truth. Otherwise, they'd modify their bid slightly so that the seller would pick that one as opposed to this one or whatever else.
Oh, yes, right. All right. Any more questions? All right. Thank you. Okay. Next speaker, in a few minutes, we'll set up some changes.